News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here's your host for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence.
Greetings. Welcome on board WKOK's live telephone talk show. On the Mark, I'm Mark Lawrence. Mr. Craig DeFazio is directly across
from
me.
Good morning.
Good morning. He is an individual who is, what do I want to call you? Investor, banker, entrepreneur.
A human being.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Ben always tries to say he's an American first.
There you go.
Unless, of course, you're not supporting Republicans. Well, he's still an American, I guess, but you're off the list. So, yeah, Craig DeFazio, good local resident, has a background in finance and business, and just takes fabulous care of a number of entities around here, not the least of which is his good family. So, yeah, welcome
Thank
aboard.
You. Thank you very much, Mark. Yeah,
thanks for coming in. Oh, and you're a conservative at heart? Is that true?
Sensible conservative.
Okay.
I don't toe a line.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, geez, you must have hated Trump.
No, I did not, but...
not hate, that's the wrong word.
That's right.
Must not have been your favorite time. All right, well, we have asked for and received an opportunity to talk to Mrs. Sensible herself, Stacy Mastrolia. Dr. Mastrolia is an associate professor of accounting in the Freeman College of Management at Bucknell University. Of course, she's been following the goings-on with the bank, but she has added to this what is always just fabulous common sense information for what we can do, what individuals can do out there. So, Professor, thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Thank you, Mark. You always pump me up in the morning. I'm grateful to be here.
Well, good. Yeah, that's the only thing I do well here is make others feel good while they're here. So, all right. So that concludes that portion of the broadcast day. Your analysis of what went on, when somebody told me that Silicon Bank was failing, I thought, okay, well, they didn't have enough investments and people wanted their money back. Okay, that's just that simple. But, boy, I'll tell you what, the analysis and the politics and the banking and bailout are not. Give us your sort of your observation of the Silicon Bank collapse.
Yeah, so I guess I really want to start with the fact that if you are and I'm sorry for my scratchy throat, I have the common cold. If you're a person who has less than $250,000 in the bank right now, you're fine. You're fine. Let me just start with that. Silicon Valley Bank is unique in that it grew exponentially over the past couple of years, and it had a lot of venture capitalist money for Silicon Valley high-tech startup companies. So all banks are susceptible to the underlying issue that Silicon Valley Bank had with the inflation rate, the quick ramp-up of interest rates, and the fact that banks have to hold longer-term, medium- and longer-term investments in order to satisfy the regulators. But what was unique about Silicon Valley Bank is that they had a ton of cash come in recently. They made some, likely we're going to find out, bad decisions by management in terms of managing the interest rate risk. And the interest rate risk is the risk that the investments that you have that interest rates will change and that will affect the value of the interest, interest rates will change and that will affect the value of the investments that you have. So that's the problem that they had. They were holding treasury bills. The interest rate has been going up. When the interest rate goes up, these fixed investments like treasury bills, the value of the investment goes down. Interest rates and value are inverse relationship. So then they had to sell some in order to satisfy the clients who were trying to take money out of the bank. When they reported those losses, venture capitalists saw the losses. They knew that this was a sign that the bank was liquidating some investments. They told their clients to pull the money. And clients started to pull the money, and that started what was the very beginning of the bank run for Silicon Valley Bank because of the nature of their customers, so to speak. So all banks are susceptible to this underlying interest rate hikes, the effect of the interest rate hikes, and we've even seen this morning the report on First Republic Bank. But Silicon Valley Bank is unique. And politically add to it the fact that it's in California, very liberal customers, and how quickly they approached the regulators and the government for assistance and how quickly and frankly unprecedentedly they have allowed to the regulators have allowed the bank to recover, the customers of the bank to recover all of their assets, not just up to the $250,000 limit, which is where I started. If you have $250,000 or less in one individual bank, you're already insured by FDIC insurance. And if you're in a credit union, you're already insured by credit union insurance. So this is really billion-dollar companies. Some of the customers of Silicon Valley Bank, Circle, $3.3 billion. Roku, $487 million. Roblox, $150 million. That's what the administration agreed to insure. It's crazy.
Well, and usually when I ask a question, I know the answer, but I don't know the answer to this. A lot of folks are criticizing the board because some of the individuals didn't have banking experience and or were not monitoring what the bank was doing. Others say they were heavily invested in the ESG style of investing, making sure that, you know, less of a carbon footprint and that kind of thing. Or they just called them a woke board. Others said, well, too many of them were venture capitalists and not enough of them were sort of boring banks. So, what's your observation about those types of remarks?
Yeah, I've not looked into the resumes of the board members, but from everything that I'm hearing and reading and finding in my research, the bank was unique, and I believe from what I'm from my own research, that as things unfold, there will be numerous instances of, like, gross negligence, just what one might call ignorant stupidity, and how we're going to see that in terms of it being culpable or not culpable, I don't know. But the comments about them taking big bonuses or selling shares of stock leading up to it, the government is used to researching that. They will research everything that led up to it, and they will claw back what they can claw back. This is not uncommon in a corporate failure, that they go back and they look and see the trading habits and the behaviors of the individuals. What's going to be unique is, frankly, just the ignorant stupidity and what courts or the government is going to do in terms of holding people culpable for their incapableness to do the job that they were paid to do.
Stacy, this is Craig. I have a question. What do you tell your students as you're talking to your students? What kind of conversation do you have in the classroom to talk to them about how do you prevent something like this? I mean, we saw it with Theranos not too long ago, where you had a board that was not acting responsibly and weren't doing their due diligence. So what do you tell your students?
Yeah, so I actually, for the past, I think it's 4 or 5 years now, I've taught a senior seminar class on corporate fraud. And we look at corporate fraud from, like, the Match King in the early 1900s all the way up through today. And we look at about 10 or 15 corporate frauds and kind of dig deep. And what they learn as the semester unfolds is everything old is new again. It's all the same. It's people with ill intent, generally ill intent, not usually stupidity or ignorance. It's generally people with ill intent exploiting whatever is exploitable in their time. And corporations are run by people. Banks are run by people. So it's people's behavior. It's the same behaviors that you see in your friends and you see in your acquaintances and you see in your coworkers or you see in your fellow students. The idea of professional skepticism, so I'm a CPA and, you know, have been for years. So the idea of professional skepticism, you really can't teach it. You just have to show it again and again and again and again that, you know, who would have seen these cracks? What would you have done in the same circumstance? It's very difficult for my students who are generally, you know, 22-year-olds to read and understand the idea of professional skepticism. And that's why I created the senior seminar course. One, it's super fun to look at corporate fraud. But two, to show them again and again and again and again. It's the same with only differences related to time. Obviously, there's no computers with the Match King in Sweden back in the early 1900s. And some of the more recent frauds, Madoff, very, very simple. But underlying it all is just lies. And do the lies hide ignorance or do the lies hide bad behavior?
Where do you think, without maybe going too far into the politics angle of this, where should the government have been? How do they prevent this? I know they reacted to it, but shouldn't we expect as taxpayers that you've got some of the brightest people in there that are setting policy and that are overlooking what the banks and the banking institutions are doing with our money?
Yeah, I think we have oversight in place. I think a lot, we've been in this low interest rate environment for so long. I think some people have forgotten what happens when interest rates rise. As consumers, we see our mortgage rates go up. We see our credit card rates go up. All variable interest rates go up. There's going to be fallout over the fact that we have some of these long-term debts that are held at these lower interest rates, not reflecting current risk. So I think all of finance professionals and banking professionals need to look at models that play out what happens when an interest rate returns to a more, quote, normal rate in the 5-7% range, because all banks are holding these longer term treasuries, and I don't really know what's happened with which one was it this morning, First Republic Bank, but I won't be surprised to find out that part of their issue as well is cash flow. People are jumpy and taking money out of the bank, and the banks have to sell these longer term investments, which are on their books at a loss because of the interest rate increases. So I think people just need to stop and think about it.
What kind of practical...
Not people, like professionals.
What kind of practical, straightforward, common sense banking information should I take away from all this discussion?
If you have less than $250,000 in the bank, and what is insured by the FDIC and credit union insurance as well, cash, CDs, checking, savings, right? What's not insured anywhere, mutual funds, stocks, bonds, commodities like gold, crypto, none of that's insured by the FDIC. Investments are not insured. When you buy an investment, you take on that risk. But cash, savings, checking accounts, CDs, these are all federally insured up to $250,000. If you're really nervous, you might go for two banks, figuring if one bank has a problem, at least you'll be able to get your cash out of the second bank. But really, normally, it's surprising, but banks fail. The FDIC has paid out many, many, many times over the past couple of years, and we never hear about it in the news. The FDIC is very good at paying out when there are bank failures. What was different about Silicon Valley is they decided to pay out for millions and billions of dollars instead of $250,000. They're very good at paying $250,000. So I say you wouldn't do anything. Now, having $250,000 in the bank isn't crazy. Somebody could have just sold their house or their business and have that money sitting in an account or a CD for a couple of months while they, work through a transition. If you have more than $250,000 in a bank, you need to split that between banks. You need to keep in each bank for each investor. If you're married, it can be $250 for each individual, but not a joint account. Each account, each bank has to be below $250,000. And then just stop worrying about it. Get back to doing something constructive.
What ideas would you have for maybe changing the laws? And do you believe that the level, the $250,000 coverage, is enough? And should they cover all deposits? Should they set a higher limit? And what kind of precedent does this send where they've helped out Silicon Valley Bank? Are they going to help out every other bank?
Yeah, those are great questions. For a blog post I just wrote for my website, I went back and looked at the history of FDIC insurance, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it started out at back in 1934 at $2,500. Now, of course, $2,500 in 1934 is closer to, I don't know, $50,000 today. But they've hiked it seven times since it started in 1934. And the last time they hiked it was back in 2008 with the financial crisis. And I just suspected they would hike it with the COVID crisis. But the COVID crisis didn't really create runs on banks because the government was giving money away, you know, left and right. So the banks weren't really affected by that. Inflation adjusted, $250,000 does not reflect the same $250,000 that was set in place in 2008. So tagging it to inflation would seem to make sense to me if you want to protect investors at a certain level. Rather than having to adjust it, you know, just adjust it for inflation, put an inflation clause on it. But the point of the FDIC insurance was to give people confidence in the banks back in 1933 with the stock market crash. And it was meant to protect small, you know, regular people who might have their entire livelihood wiped out. And one of the interest rate hikes, I forget which one, I think it was in about the 50s, they had done a study, and that level of FDIC insurance would have covered 99% of the money in the banks. So obviously that's not true today anymore. But no insurance, no public funded insurance can protect $3 billion. I mean, it's just crazy. And the banks fund this, sure, taxpayers don't fund it. But the banks are going to have to make the FDIC whole after the Silicon Valley payout, and Signature Bank for that matter. And the banks are for-profit institutions. They're just going to raise fees. Or if you're, so you can look at the bank, this crisis as an investor, which is how we, or not an investor, as a depositor, which is how we've been talking about it. But you also have people who invest in banks. They invest in bank stocks. And the value of the bank stocks have been very volatile lately, and likely will be somewhat depressed because they're going to pick up the tab for this billions and billions of bailout. They've got to make the FDIC whole. The banks do.
Should we re-regulate, repeal Dodd-Frank, or just impose some new rules on banks?
I think we're in a different realm now than we were even, you know, 4 or 5 years ago pre-COVID. Pre-COVID, the regulators had started ticking the interest rates back up again. And when COVID hit, they dropped them back down to zero. They'd only ticked them up to like 2% over, I think it was like a year and a half. So it was much, much slower than what they're doing now. But it's like it's a one-trick pony. Inflation, raise rates. Raise rates has fallout. And raising rates as aggressively as they've been, this is part of the fallout, is banks have long-term investments in treasury bills, which are declining in value. We can't be a one-trick pony. We've got to look at more moving parts and then talk about it, right? I mean, if we, Silicon Valley Bank came down so fast, within 2 days, the regulators had decided to cover billions and billions of dollars and told us, tut, tut, their little citizen, don't worry about it. The banks are going to pay for it. It's just unprecedented. It was a little shocking for me. Mm-hmm. I'm so shocked.
I believe there was.
I don't know that it's the wrong thing, but anything done in haste is unwise.
I understand that. Some other banks stepped up and provided $30 billion of monies to First Republic Bank to prop that up. And then, are you familiar with Credit Suisse? I mean, I've heard a number of commentators say that that's going to be the next bank to fall. But I don't know if I don't know to what extent that's accurate.
Yes, on First Republic, I did hear that. But this is very new news this morning, so I haven't done any research on it yet. And that's not surprising, because the banks want the American citizen and companies and small businesses and big businesses to be confident in the banking system. If the U.S. banking system implodes, we're going to need water and guns and bullets. Like, that is crazy talk. So the fact that the banks are trying to, you know, heal from within, or at least hold a position. Credit Suisse is different because Credit Suisse has had problems before. They're not squeaky clean before. They've been, what is it, the second or the third most troublesome European bank as it relates to regulators in the past recent years. So I'm not really sure what we're going to find out about Credit Suisse when they start peeling that back, because they've been band-aiding it and band-aiding it and band-aiding it, and they don't have as much disclosure and readily available information. So that one I think too will be unique and interesting.
How much
they don't have any money at Credit Suisse.
How much more time do you think we're going to need to see this all play out before, you know, we can kind of look in the rearview mirror and say, you know, boy, that was a close one, or we've gotten through it?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens with interest rates the next Fed meeting. I think banks in general, especially if people keep pulling their money out, are going to be releasing losses. They're going to be losing money because they're going to have to sell these long-term investments at a loss. But losing money from an accounting standpoint doesn't mean they don't have money in the bank to pay depositors. So the banks hopefully are looking at their interest rate risk management strategy, and hopefully they have more experienced and longer-term people on their boards, because people who've been on boards for longer term or who are more experienced have managed banks through periods of time when we did have more normal interest rates. And if that's the period we're going to enter now, to have, you know, single digit but 4%, 5%, 6% interest rates, then we need to start managing banks and companies as if that's the new normal. And I think we're kind of sitting on the sidelines. I think professionals are sitting on the sidelines and not ready to admit that that may be what we're re-entering, or just that that's the new world. It's so consumer-driven, because 6% interest rates to consumers is astounding and prevents them from buying homes and, you know, cars and getting on with life. But, you know, in the 1980s, we had double-digit interest rates and people bought homes and cars. So it's just a different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank
I think
you
it'll
so-
be a while.
Thank you so much for your analysis and your observations. I'm glad you were there when mm-hmm. I contacted you this week, and that you were already on it. So fantastic. Well, thank you, Stacy.
Thank you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Professor Stacy Mistroli, Associate Professor of Accounting in the Freeman College of Management at Bucknell University. We're going to talk about her remarks momentarily.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake, a service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
All right. Well, this is sad. We solved the banking crisis off mic, though.
Yeah, but we don't have any money. That's the problem.
Well, we don't have that much. And one of my listeners says, not a crisis. See, it's not a crisis. It's a pickle. It's a banking pickle that we're in right now. All right, well, Craig DeFazio is here on the mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. During the 9 a.m. hour, you'll be able to call us and give us your remarks about the comments of Professor Mistrolia. We're so glad that she checks in from time to time. Let's see, 570-743-9565 will be the open phone. You can email us at onthemarket@wkok.com and text us at 70236. Include the keyword OTM. You understand money. You've been an investment counselor. Is that the right word?
Well, legal. I did estate planning, elder law. But just in general, I mean, just general knowledge of finances and investing a little bit.
Are 401s and 401ks insured?
That's a good question. She said that if the money is in the bank, $250,000 or less is insured, but anything that's any investments are not. Now, I don't know if the 401ks are covered under a different entity of that, so I don't know that.
Yeah, different policy. Because quadrillions of dollars tied up in those, you know, which those are investment vehicles made of stocks. So in stocks, you know, go down. All right, we're going to take the CBS News break. When we come back, we'll have headlines and we'll dig into this. Maybe there's something else. President Biden's going to have to take some action related to the drone strike over the Black Sea, so we can talk about that and anything else. We can talk about the weather. This is WDKOK Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Now, here's your host for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence.
What did you say? You're a professional skeptic?
Well, Professor Mastroli used the term professional skepticism. I like that. I like that.
You're not easily swayed by anything.
No, not even my teenagers.
You're like Matt. You've asked Matt Cotrillo about his politics. He says he hates everything. All right. Well, welcome on board, everybody. It is the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. I'm Mark Lawrence. My good co-host today, a guest co-host, is Craig DeFazio, which I guess if you go to the courthouse, he's got an R in the registration, right? But you try to be a common sense listener.
Absolutely.
Smart person.
I like to listen first.
Okay. Well, that's a rare commodity these days. All right. On the Mark is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Please do go exactly where I went yesterday, sunburymotors.com, and send the quick lane a message. Wanted to see if our truck was finished. We got four new tires on the truck. Great. Fabulous deal on the tires, and Goodyear Wrangler tires on all four wheels. So you do what I did, and then get them pumped up with nitrogen. Nitrogen, a bigger molecule. Yes, most air is mostly nitrogen anyway, but this is a bigger molecule. Expands and contracts less in the winter. You lose less through the tiny little pinholes that you may have in things, and the Sunbury Motor Company is the place to go. So let me tell you about the Sunbury Motor Company in greater detail. They got the quick lane on North 4th Street in Sunbury. They specialize in all types of service on vehicles, state inspections, nitrogen for the tires. They got a body shop, a big truck shop, great big tow trucks. They're really more of a crane than a tow truck, but you name it, they got it down there. And rollback trucks, too. So they take fabulous care of every vehicle, whether you got a beater truck that's from 1990 or a brand spanking new Sunbury Motor Company Ford F-150 2023 with an 8-foot bed and dual cabs and all-wheel drive and sunroof and leather seats, and I'm sorry, I'm thinking here what my next truck that they're going to loan me should have. All electric, too. Yeah, get it electric. All right, Ford, Hyundai, and Kia at the Sunbury Motor Company, sunburymotors.com. I'm going to breeze through some news headlines here, but the telephone number is 570-743-9565. Email us at onthemarket@wkok.com. Text us at 70236. Always include the keyword OTM. Route 225 in Northumberland County still closed at Schwaben Creek Road. There was a crash there around 2:30 this morning. Still blocked as pole and wires are put back there. The car was destroyed, but no injuries. But 225 still blocked. After closing in late January for equipment repairs, the Sunbury Municipal Authority Recycling Center says they're going to reopen to the public next week. A Monday is when they reopen. So 956,000 tons of cardboard are going to show up at the recycling center on Monday. Yeah, you have to parse it out over the next couple of weeks, but call them at 570-286-5858 if you have questions. Even though we didn't have much of a winter, PennDOT still wants to know how they did.
PennDOT says the 17-question survey, which should take about 5 minutes to complete, is available on its website through April 6th. The survey focuses on people's expectations for the clearing of roads and how they rate PennDOT's winter services. Acting PennDOT Secretary Mike Carroll says, through this survey, the public can share their comments, expectations, and perceptions, which help us review our operations and ways to enhance public information.
Mark Sims, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
And finally, the U.S. Congress is trying to make a 4-day work week a federal law, but don't get too excited. A bill was introduced yesterday that would reduce the standard work week from 40 hours to 32. While keeping annual salaries the same, a pile of studies and real-world tests have given plenty of evidence that a four-day work week is better for productivity and makes workers happier. It probably would initially.
You got to work, though.
Well, you got to put the work in. I would love to do 4 10-hour days, you know, and then have the...
A lot of people who do that.
Right.
Especially in the health industry.
Right, or a police. They work strange hours. Anyway, some unions are all for it, but they say it's a fat chance it would make it through the House or the Senate. Okay. All right, we do have some callers on the line. Lynn Hull is our fabulous producer who tells us Dale in Sunbury is number one. Go ahead, sir. I know it's the Bar Association leading to these banks.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, Bernie Madoff tried to use this as his defense. It's called fractional reserve banking. He tried to use the same model as the Federal Reserve. So basically, it's illegal banking. So that the bad news is we don't have no money. The dollar ain't worth nothing.
What do you mean by illegal banking?
It's called fractional reserve banking.
Spell that first word with
fake.
It. Trashional?
That means if you melt 100 pennies, you're not going to be able to make 13 pennies out of copper. That's what that means. Okay, so Bernie Madoff tried to use that for his defense, but they wouldn't let him use that. So I just want to say, you know, the good news is we don't owe nothing to our national debt because it's the whole illegal. So I just want to say, is Europe our friend or foe? Because we just put a stake right in their head. That's crazy.
All right, we got you. All right, well, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. All right, Bill from Bloomsburg, line number two. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, the professor forgot to mention the qualifications that bank was run by idiots, Democratic idiots, and the reason the collapse is that big pile of rotten oatmeal in the White House bankrupting this country. Under the Trump economy, when everything was low, that bank was making money. It had a $155 billion in the bank, and they put it in the government stuff where if Trump was still in office, they would have been fine. But this been done Biden is corrupt and running this country into the ground, and it's going to be a lot more of this coming around.
Well, the Silicon Valley Bank collapse began 4 years ago, and Dodd-Frank, that President Trump signed, facilitated it because it deregulated.
Did
they didn't have to do these stress tests that other banks have to do. What about that?
Did you pay attention to the people that are running it and the qualifications that they didn't have to run that bank?
Well,
now it was like a homie, hire this, hire that person.
So Professor Mastrolia mentioned that she didn't have a chance to go back to look at all of the resumes of the folks that were on there. So she didn't comment on that because she didn't have the information. But
she knows it. She knows it.
Well, they said that the people did. That, you know,
she's
only
at the
one
highest
of them,
level. If I'm
go ahead.
Only one of them had qualifications, or I should say, only one of them was from the banking industry. That's from what the news reports had said. So I'm just not going to assume that they're all Democrats. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't, but I'm just not going to make that assumption. The other thing that I challenge you on a little bit is the Democrats, you know, are spending, but you know. We've had Republican presidents as well who've spent. And so my issue is with both sides, not just with one side. My issue is with both sides.
All right. Your response, young Bill. Go ahead.
Well, Biden, he took the troops out. He has the open border. He's raising interest rates. He's spending money. He shut this country down over and the laptop. The corruption, we're run by a coup. How can he let this idiot run this country?
Well, President Trump.
At the highest level, they're trying to bank this country.
President Trump spent a lot more money than President Biden did.
Trump spent it on a wall. Trump spent it, if he spent the money, it was for the betterment of the country.
Two stimulus packages.
The difference.
Two stimulus packages under
Trump,
$7 trillion.
Other countries. This country was growing.
Okay. I think you got some blinders on, sir, that are you're not seeing the whole truth. I know President Biden might not be a good president. There's no, you know.
He should be in jail.
Right, okay, we can argue that. All right, that is fine. That is a valid opinion you can definitely back up, but only one of our presidents is,
it's factual.
Is under investigation by like six different or seven agencies.
You cannot deny that he should be in jail.
I'm not denying. All right. We'll give you the very, very last word. Please go right ahead. All right. Well said.
Hey, open borders coming to a neighborhood near you.
I agree with Bill.
Yeah,
I mean, I do agree with him in the sense that there are a lot of significant issues under this administration that aren't being dealt with. And I do think that President Trump's business policies and finance policies were really, really good. I think the economy was doing really, really well. So we could argue about what caused it, but I do think that there's a lot to be said about his President Trump's success, regardless of a lot of his personal
issues. The dog's not too happy with that comment. Sorry.
No.
All right, we got you, Bill. Thank you, sir.
Republican.
Yeah, always.
All right.
Thank you. All right.
Give him an extra treat.
Yeah, the
today.
Dog couldn't take it anymore. He had to speak up. All right, Stan, last caller before a quickie break. Go right ahead.
Good morning. Rotting pile of oatmeal in the White House. I kind of like that. But anyways, I have a question. I don't have the answer, but what happens if the FDIC fund that's supposed to insure all the accounts across the country runs out of money?
Well,
I don't know if it's possible.
Then we'll need taxpayers.
Well, exactly, but they, you know, you and I are insured up to $250,000. I haven't met that threshold, and I probably never will. But that's neither here nor there. Biden says that all the depositors in the bank out there will be made whole, which means they will get all their money.
Mm-hmm.
So does the FDIC have that big a pile of money laying around that they can fund that? And how is it? Biden have the authority to tell the FDIC that they have to do that. That's the question. Does he have the authority to tell them that they have to do that when the system is set up? You will be insured up to $250,000 in each account that you have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking the question. You have an answer? I don't.
I don't.
I don't know if the.
I doubt it.
I don't know if the monies that the government used to sustain Silicon Valley Bank came from FDIC. I don't know if they had another pot of money that
they
used.
Yeah, there's some other insurance banking pot, but still not taxpayers.
Well,
where does the government get its money if it doesn't get it from the taxpayer?
Well, the government didn't get the money. It came from the banking industry.
Well, as I understand it, there's banking fees that the banks have to pay into, and these fees get passed on. And these fees end up coming to you and I as consumers of banks, and we are ultimately going to be paying it. You know, we as the taxpayers are going to be paying a higher fee, I suppose, in order to make certain that Silicon Valley Bank stays whole. But they didn't, you know, they didn't just come in and take the money out of a taxpayer a fund, I don't believe. But ultimately, I think we are going to end up putting
just not directly through
not
taxpayers.
Directly, immediately.
All right. So the banks are required to pay a fee to the, is it they pay into the feds or to the government?
The
Federal Reserve
banking,
or the government, the federal government.
Private banking fees stay in the bank system.
Which is run by the Federal Reserve or the government?
Not the Federal Reserve, not the government. Private banking industry, insurance policy, thingamabobber it's called. That's the official
but
name.
But they are required by the government to do that, correct?
I believe so. Yeah, you have to be keep your foundation strong.
So it is a
strong.
Tax.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in the form of regulation. Well, yeah, in that sense, I think you could say it's a form of a tax because the government imposes it. I mean, the government imposes all kinds of taxes if you're going to do that. In that case, you know, not stopping at a stop sign is a tax because the borough makes the regulation and you go through it and you're required to pay the fine. Everything's a tax thing.
Yeah, but you don't have to pay that if you don't run through the stop sign. But if you have a bank account, you have to pay it, because the banks and credit unions will charge you whatever little percentage that they charge you as banking fees, correct?
Yep, there you go.
That's true.
It's like Obamacare. Yep. When is a tax not a tax? Well, when it's something you have to pay.
I mean, the real question is, where does Biden get the authority to do what he said he was going to do? Make the depositors whole, no matter the amount that they had in their accounts. And from what I've heard, it's in the millions of dollars in each account.
Oh, billions.
Correct?
Yeah, everything is billions in this conversation.
Well, I didn't say billions. I said millions. Some of the bigger companies have millions, even up to hundreds of millions in their accounts, single accounts.
Yeah, Roku had a half a billion there.
Again, how much money does the FDIC have to be able to put in it? Because evidently the government, the president, is going to order the FDIC to make them whole, because the money's not coming from taxpayers, supposedly, correct?
Well, there's some other bank catch fund. It's, like a parachute fund that they have.
Is there really?
Right. But you and I pay the bank fees eventually. You know, Wells Fargo is one of the banks that lost a lot of money, in recent decades. Well, guess what? Who paid for that after 10 years in Wells Fargo's fees when you went there? People like you and I using the bank.
So on, I guess it was NBC, what's the morning show on Sundays? Meet the Press?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's on the radio.
They had a guest on there, and they let the cat out of the bag that the Silicon Valley Bank was the Democrat Party ATM machine. So would that be a reason maybe that they're going to make all the depositors whole? Just asking? That's what was put out by this person, that evidently they fund the Democrat Party campaigns heavily. So, possibly.
Let's see. Senate Foreign Relations Chairman Bob Menendez, well, he's a Democrat. He probably would not have said that. Senator Kevin Cramer, who's a Republican.
I don't think it was any elected official.
Former FDIC Chair Sheila Bair. And CNBC senior economic reporter Steve Leisman.
I think it's factual that a lot of monies flowed to the Democratic Party and the campaigns, etc. I don't know about all the money, but
an ATM for Democrats.
Do you think there was any criminal malfeasance going on out there that people need to be frog marched into court?
Yes,
I think there is, and I hope to see it, but I have a feeling or somebody may be scapegoated. You know, the low-level guy will be scapegoated, and the big cheese will, do the usual walk away.
We got to hit the road. Thank you, sir.
All right, have a good one.
Yep, good questions all, especially about the criminal aspect. Mm-hmm. That's always lacking under these.
We'll find out about it 10 years from now.
Somebody pointed out back in 2008, no banker got arrested.
There you go. It'll be 10, 15 years when we figure it out.
All right, we'll take a quick break, but we would invite you to join Jim, who's standing by in queue. Call us, 570-743-9565. Craig DeFazio, our good co-host here today. Conservative Common Sense Talk about money. Oh, we could do a show. No, he shakes his head. No, okay. All right, 570-743-WKOK. Email us at onthemarket@wkok.com and text us at 70236.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignment, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
All right. 570-743-9565. Jim from Ashland's been patiently waiting. Good morning, sir. You're on the mark.
Good morning. You know, it always comes back to money. Mm-hmm. And
banking collapses her money.
The sad thing is that why are we on the hook? The people should be reimbursed, but the bank itself, if the practices were stupid, they should. Stupidity should cost you.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, speaking of things costing or not, I think she's done a wonderful job. What do you guys think of Joanne Stir so far?
I actually don't have an opinion. I haven't met her yet. Folks said she was at a transportation meeting asking some very good questions. Our reporter said that she's super inquisitive and her learning curve is like straight up at the moment, so that's good. Asking good questions seems to me a good start, so she'll be checking in the month ahead or so. She's going to be on the radio, so we'll be talking to her.
What's your email again?
onthemark@wkok.com.
Okay, because my friend Blog, he was at the state committee meeting, and it was quite insightful, and I'd like to share it with you. You learned something. But and as far as this election for replacement of Linda Culver, boy, if we could get another...
Oh, Jim, your phone's cutting out. Of course, if your phone cut out, you're probably not hearing me telling you. Say that whole sentence again, Jim. Say that whole sentence again.
I said if we could clone or get another
Linda Culver
that she's running, she is a wonderful representative.
I agree.
You couldn't get a better woman.
I agree.
There's what, 13 people running?
Something like that.
And that's, are they all going to be on your program eventually, or?
No, one will. We're not going to give them pre-interviews. They get selected by a caucus or a committee, so it's not like an election where there's an advantage for us interviewing all of them. But anybody can call the show anytime.
Why do you think,
right,
I agree,
that's true.
I agree with you, but why do you think Linda Culver has done a good job?
Because she cares for the people. You know, I'm not the world's smartest guy. I never claim to be. But I've been around people enough to see that when someone is genuinely liked or not. And I was at an event in Hickory Corners, you know, and she used to represent that area, and she does again. And they loved her. I mean, it was obvious that these people really liked her and liked what she was doing for them. And so... You don't see that too often. I mean, we have a state, senator that is not really, you know, people respect him, show him respect and those kind of things, but he's not really liked, you know, and even myself, I respect his ability as a father and a husband, but I don't like his votes. He votes in ways that are good for him, but not necessarily good for the people. But Linda always has the people's good at heart. And that's what I like about her.
Yeah, it seems that way, that she is very genuine, at least from my experiences with her, very genuine. When you're talking to her, you know, she seems like she's engaged in what you're saying. And, you know, her mannerisms and the way that she speaks, she seems like she's less political and more about the people and doing the right thing. But that's been my
experience. And you will find the same with Joanne Stir if you engage with her.
Okay.
So you have two good reps. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you so much.
You too.
Chris from Milton. Good morning, sir. You're on the mark.
Yeah, I was didn't particularly like the way they just decided to take over the debt of everybody instead of just what they legally were mandated to do. And had some questions about it. But if you think about it, if these companies had that much money in there, you run into a big, too big to fail. If not, they're not getting there, losing their money or not having access to it is going to cause their companies to close down, then you see the chain reaction that could happen. And I think that's why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make a certain amount of sense. Also, the bank might have enough money to cover everything that's going on once they start taking the pieces, because they still have loans out with people paying in and all that. If they took away the company's money, they wouldn't be able to pay it in if they go bankrupt, if they're from the startups that were going on. It's more likely to hurt them, too. But the amount of money in the Reserve Insurance is $282 billion, I believe.
So far, so good.
Yeah, what's that invested in?
So far, so good. But, and you know, the bank is, any bank is going to go under if everybody comes and asks for their money at the same time.
Right.
That's just the nature of the banking industry. So it doesn't really quite mean they don't have the value in the long term.
Right.
But if they don't have the short term, if too many people panic and pull money out, it automatically will break any bank. And so it's not even clear they don't have enough money to cover everything in the long term.
You're right,
so
but there's
they will actually have to use out of that fund is very questionable at the moment.
I think that's where, like, the formula, so if you've got a board that's an active board to some extent, and making sure that, you know, your long-term investments and your short-term investments are sort of matched in some kind of ratio, so that if there is a run, you have the ability to cover it. But I think in this case, you know, everybody was either asleep at the wheel or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think everybody panicked is the thing.
Well, they did after the fact.
Once the big people who had the big money in there started trying to get their money, well, it wasn't there. Because it wouldn't be there in any bank.
But the reason why they tried to get their money is because they got wind that Silicon Valley Bank was actually selling their assets in some unusual way. For what reason? And it caused people to get concerned, and they wanted to get their money before it went under. So what I'm saying is that if you had a board of and the people on the board,
well, that's what the stress test that they took off in 2018. Excuse me, would have done. They have independent auditors saying, well, if there's a turn in the economy or this happens in the economy, will you have enough to not have problems? And that's the testing the 2008 bill took off of them.
And that was smaller banks that got to fly under that radar, right? Not all banks.
Yeah, well, he raised it from 50. It used to be up. It used to be the larger banks, and then they took it down to only the 50 million or billion. I get confused.
50 billion and up. Yep, it's 50 billion and up. Right, and at the time, Silicon Valley Bank was not 50 billions plus, so
they grew. And the too big to fail is still a problem. A lot of banks, including the big four, I guess, are all much bigger than they need to be in terms of they are too big to fail. And they should probably be split up somehow, but, you know, people don't like, politicians are lobbied not to do that. Republicans seem to be trained not to think that stuff is a good idea.
What kind of penalty would you put on the bank, like Silicon Valley Bank? Do you think there should be a penalty for them not being able to, you know, cover their short-term deposits that were...
Well, I don't know if it's a stockholder-type bank. Is it owned by stockholders, or is it owned by... I don't really know that, but I assume they wouldn't be getting... Those people who... are not protected from bankruptcy or anything else relative to any losses they take in a drop in stock price or whatever it is.
Okay.
So they haven't done anything about that yet.
And they say they aren't going to, from what I understand.
Okay. Well, thank you for your observation, sir. We love the factual truth you bring to the show.
Well, you know, some of that's opinion in there.
A little.
And some of it's just ignorance because, you know, what do any of us know about the banking system, really?
It's pretty complex.
I'm not even sure, you know. Greenspan said that he didn't believe that anybody would bankrupt the whole United States economy to make a short-term profit. And that's got to be one of the stupidest things anybody ever said.
And here we are.
But that's why he didn't interfere in the housing bubble when he could have.
Okay.
Because that stupidity exists.
All right, we got you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Thank you. That is Chris from Milton. All right, we got a caller standing by, but we'll take more comers. 570-743-9565. That's 570-743-WKOK. You may email us as no one has done today. We haven't had any emails. Maybe it's busted off to test it. On the mark at WKOK.com and text. Send them to 70236. Include the keyword OTM.
Hello there.
All right, we'll take more comers. 570-743-9565. That's 570-743-WKOK. We're still in the banking industry. We had Professor Mastrolia from Bucknell University back on the line. Just a super common sense information. So we always love chatting with her. And she didn't have too much to say. One of our good listeners. Well, we started talking about ESG with John Shipman probably a week ago, and then or 2 weeks ago. And that's this environmental, social, and governance aspect of banking. Some folks say it's good. Some folks say it doesn't matter. A bad investment's a bad investment, whether it's environmentally sound or not. And a good investment's good, whether it's environmentally sound or not. But I know some investment counselors that really are out there trying to make money for their clients, so they don't really worry about all those other things. But that's sort of becoming a different thing. Had an unusual board of folks who weren't bankers, who were heavily venture capitalist-oriented folks at Silicon Valley Bank. So that may have been a factor and getting way out over the end of their skis a little bit. All right, we got another caller waiting, but we'd love to hear from you. 570-743-9565. Email us at onthemarket@wkok.com. Text us at 70236. Good morning, Joe. You are on the mark.
Good morning, Mark. So this banking deal, it's a pretty big deal, and we've had issues like this in the past. And I was reading a little bit on it last night, but I found an article as I was reading about that that I want to switch gears here, that I think's a little bit more of an issue than this banking deal right now. So yesterday, Dr. Levine was in Connecticut at a pediatrics roundtable and said that in the near future that changing kids' gender will soon be fully embraced, and it will be normalized as no big deal, and the Biden administration is fully behind this. I'm sorry, but I'm just absolutely disgusted by this. This is our youth, and kids, we have age limits for certain things because kids aren't...
Oops. Joe, call back. We lost you for some reason. Was on a cell phone up in Williamsport. Sounded like a good signal until it cut out. I appreciate what he's saying. People concerned about this. That comment made a lot of stir nationwide. So it's, we're going to be hearing more about that. That it will become far less unusual for kids who are transgender to get surgery or gender affirmation counseling and surgery and hormones and things in the years ahead. I think it probably will become more common as parents and kids get more informed on it. But in what way is the Biden administration on board? She said that, but
she said that.
What's the and the
she
evidence?
She said it's going to become not routine. She didn't use the word routine, but more common, and it's going to be more accepted. And I have a major I got major issues with it as well. I mean, I just don't think that somebody who's in her position should be, you know, saying such things. encouraging. This is the issue I have in terms of encourage. It sounds to me like they're encouraging kids to have this gender change. You know, it's one thing for someone to struggle with identity a little bit or a lot, to struggle with it. And I don't have any children that would fall in this category. So I'm speaking, I don't want to say I'm speaking out of turn, but I do have an opinion on it. It's one thing for an individual to say, I might feel one way or another, I'm attracted to men or women, or I'm aroused by men or women. But for kids who are going through sort of a vulnerable period of life, which is, you know, puberty, to tell them that it's okay to make such a change, I just don't think is responsible. I think it's one thing if it's a natural issue, but I kind of feel like our culture is trying to encourage kids to take this idea, and that's okay just to do it. And I don't want any of my children, I wouldn't want any of my children to do anything just because society says it's okay. You know, it's one thing if they're I don't know how far you want to go into this conversation.
Well, I think it's, you know, for people who are transgender, many, not all, but many say they knew all along. As soon as they had
hold on. So I'm going to use my professional skepticism. When you use the term many, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's many?
Well, there's thousands of, tens of thousands of people who are transgender in the U.S.
I get that, but how many as children knew that they knew what even transgender was, and here we are saying it's okay. I there's a lot of confusion, I think, just regardless of transgender, when you're going through puberty, of who you like and who you don't like, and you haven't had any, you may not have had many experiences.
It doesn't have to do with sexual preference. It has to do with who you feel you are and how you think you fit in the gender that you were assigned at birth. And so for the people who are the authors that I've read or the people that we've interviewed on this show, you know, they say certainly for some of the individuals, it is 3, 4, 5. One individual, the Finding Nicole book, she talks about, or the parents talk about, they wrote the book, that they knew when she was 2 that there was something different. She did not, she was he at the time, and that he wanted to wear dresses and wanted to dance like a ballerina and didn't fit in with the boys in kindergarten and so on. So, and this led to a long list of issues as the young boy was growing. And then when a teen and found out about being transgender and the internet made it okay to just study the idea of being transgender, then it was clear to that young boy that he would be better suited as a girl and transitioned to Nicole with the help of his parents, resisting, kicking and screaming all the way until they recognized that it was okay for their child. But you know people who have transgender children, and you probably have spoken to transgender people, so they say it is something that they knew from a young age, confirmed it when they were a teen and were were more aware and plus had access to sexual information or gender information on the internet. So these are the people you're talking about. You're not talking about transitioning a 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 year old. I think Dr. Levine's opinion is right. I think it will become more accepted, but it's still, you know, like any group of minorities in the U.S., they're still on the outside. We'll always be on the outside. There's people that'll never get on board. There's people that'll say, well, the parents are abusing the kids. But I think if you get informed on what the kids actually go through, you talk to individuals who are transgender, read the books about it, interview them on this show.
What about people who have transitioned and then regret having done it? We have to include them into the category as well.
I think people are people. You know, people change their minds.
That's why I think you're right. But you can't just change your mind on some of this stuff after you've done it.
On
right?
Surgeries, well, that's true. Yes.
So I think encouraging and saying it's okay for children under the age of say 18 before they've gone through puberty. I have a lot of issues with it. I obviously need to learn more about it because I don't know everything about it. But I'm just on the record. I'm not getting against the idea of children. I'm not against the idea of being transgender, but right. I have issues with there's a lot of things that kids are not allowed to do, right? From estate planning and all that. Like, I could go on and on about the things that they're not
you
allowed
can't
to do
before you're 18.
Yeah, so you're allowing them and you're encouraging them to do certain things. I don't know.
All right. Joe from Williamsport, call back if you're still listening. We'd love to hear the rest of your remarks on that. You bring up very valid points. You know, kids are making lifelong decisions about being transgender, and so that's a big factor. Some parents learn everything there is to know about transgender and still say no. And, you know, you might find yourself in that category if, you know, hypothetically speaking. So, but we know that there are parents around here who said, well, I certainly would have resisted had my student or my 18-year-old or 19-year-old, 20-year-old asked me first, but I didn't get that point. We've talked to kids at Sealance Grove that transitioned from boy to girl, and some teachers don't accept it, you know, and they dead name them using their old name, you know, that they had and not the new one. So it's not just parents and community members who resist it. There's teachers and professionals. You can't drive to Geisinger and say, okay, I like my gender-affirming surgery today, you know, just mm-hmm. by walking in the front door and saying I have, you know, tens of thousands mm-hmm. of dollars, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of knowledge and information and counseling and work that needs to be done. All right, but that's the topic at the moment, folks. We talked about banking. We can keep that going, and we have to take a quickie break. We will be right back.
You get it.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Friday. Is it Friday already?
One of our good listeners sends us a note, says, this is not a joke, but I read a story recently where a transgender female was having health issues, got checked out, and guess what? She has prostate cancer. All right. So, bound to happen, right? You still got some old parts. They're bound to go bad. Joe from Williamsport, thanks for calling back. We've talked about this a little bit. Sorry we lost you there. You're back on the mark.
Hey, I'm back. Hey, this is something that, you know, I understand. If you're over 18 and this is something you feel you need to do, then I'm all for it. But when we're talking about kids, that just takes it to another level, especially when you start reading stories about, you know, there's a lot of push that they don't even want the parents to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you start hearing about these teachers that are pushing kids to the transition. It's almost like they're preying on these kids. Kids are vulnerable. They don't know, you know, they've got a lot of feelings and emotions and trying to deal with it. And it's like some of these educators or adults are almost preying on the kids and causing them, almost like they want them to be their project. And you read a couple stories about kids that have almost committed suicide because these teachers have pushed the kids to transition and the kids doesn't even know, you know, what they're feeling. I think when you start talking about kids and these surgeries, it's in my opinion, it's abuse. I don't, after the age of 18, no problem, whatever. But when we're talking about kids and this being normalized, yeah, kids have all sorts of ideas what they want to do or what they're feeling And a lot of times that gets sorted out. And I'm not saying that this is something that's made up or anything, but I'm just saying when it comes to kids, we have certain restrictions and age limits for certain things, but to do something to your body or put a kid through at that age, I think it's wrong.
Well, I think kids want it. That's what's happening. I mean, that's the driving force behind this. And, of course, parents are the backstop. If a kid wants to do something, parents are really going to have to study up on this. Thank you, Joe. I think you're going to find a lot of people and a lot of states are going to restrict permanent transgender changes before 18. So I think you're in a safe camp there. Thank you, sir. I think the idea of waiting till you're 18, that is fine. We know the suicide rate is very high for individuals who suffer from gender dysphoria, but the suicide rate is high for individuals who are transgender also. So it doesn't seem like you don't solve the suicide problem, you know, by becoming the sexuality.
And I don't know if the suicide problem is not just isolated to transgender folks. There's a lot of people in a lot of different camps. So that's just, I just want to put that out there. But I do agree with Jim. I think, being old enough to understand the risks and understand the permanency of some of these things is necessary, and I don't think you can say that a sixth grader or seventh grader or eighth grader is really would understand that. And I think parents need to be involved, but from what I understand, there's a little bit of a push that kids should be able to do this without parents, and I just don't think I don't think we're going down the right road there.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that would be, but not here at this point. You can't get operated on without your parents' permission around here, but that's not it. But states are cracking down on the ability to do transgender-oriented optional surgery anywhere. I don't recall the state, maybe Montana, but somewhere out in the broad Midwest, or I don't know, maybe it was closer. But anyway, they're prohibiting that until the kids are 18. So even if they have doctor's permission and psychologists and parents and the kid, you have a triumvirate of people going into the courtroom to get permission, you can't. One of our listeners says, if after 18, as an adult, someone wants to have a gender change and can pay for it, that's great. For people to make a life-altering change, this borders on criminal. Kids change their minds from week to week and month to month. Don't allow things that can't be reversed to go forward for children. Work slowly to it in case their attitudes changed. All right, well, I don't think being transgender is an attitude, but you're certainly on safe, common ground with that viewpoint. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
You could have spent the morning doing a 100 other things.
Oh, sure.
Or one of the things, or maybe just sleeping in.
They're waiting for it. All those things are waiting for me.
No, okay, yeah, they're still there. You have a checklist for today?
Absolutely.
You do? Okay, super. That is Craig DeFazio. I'm Mark Lawrence. Lynn Hall and Rob Setter teamed up to be our producer today. This is WKOK Sunbury.